not know that in a race, all the runners run, but only one receives the prize? So run that you may obtain it. 1 Corinthians 9:24. Hi, I'm Rob West. The Apostle Paul exhorted the early church at Corinth to run in such a way as to win the prize. But sometimes with finances, it feels like we're in a race with no end. Today, Rachel McDonough joins us to talk about setting financial finish lines. Then we have lots of great listener questions ahead, but we won't be taking your live calls today because this program is pre-recorded. This is Faith and Finance on American Family Radio. Biblical wisdom for your financial decisions. Well, I'm delighted to welcome my friend Rachel McDonough back to the broadcast. Rachel is a certified financial planner and a certified kingdom advisor, and she always runs a good race. Rachel, great to see you again.
Hey, thanks for having me, Rob.
So, Rachel, as we look into the new year and beyond, what are financial finish lines and why are they important?
Yeah, financial finish lines are essentially the answer to the question, how much is enough, in different categories. And when we think about the potential different uses of financial resources, there are really only two overarching purposes or two buckets. The first is provision, and the second is kingdom impact. And I like this term buckets because it implies that, hey, they can get filled up, right?
Yeah.
So the kingdom impact bucket is, of course, where all of our generosity occurs. And that's really the purpose, is to further God's kingdom. And that doesn't need a finish line at all. But in order to do that job well of kingdom impact, we do need to get thoughtful and intentional about setting financial finish lines in all the different areas within our provision bucket so that we can get the clarity, confidence, and even a sense of permission to responsibly deploy more resources for kingdom impact.
Rachel, those buckets are really helpful. Let's dial into the provision bucket for a second. Help us think about setting a finish line in that area.
Yeah, the first place we need to start is really defining how much is enough for our lifestyle spending. And one way to think of this, a client of mine said that he liked the idea of using this multiple of poverty line income. So $31,200 for a family of four is the poverty line income for 2024. We'll get the new numbers for the new year shortly here. And one way to approach setting that lifestyle spending is to say, we're going to use a multiple of that number to say, here's how much is enough for our family. And then that has to be first, because once we set parameters and put some guidelines and a finish line around our lifestyle spending, then it makes it possible for us to do things like calculate out how much we might need in retirement.
Yeah, that's really helpful. Now, another area that we need to think about finish lines is related to gifts to family members. That's often something we don't consider, but it's really important, isn't it?
It is. It is. And I think as parents or as grandparents, we love to step in and fix problems for our kids instead of letting them struggle through.
Yeah.
But deciding how much is enough for the provision for our family members, you know, whether it's covering their education expenses or whatever it might be as they transition into adulthood, there can be really adverse effects to kids or grandkids getting unearned wealth, especially large gifts. So I love the Ron Blue quote. He said, "If I love my children equally, I will treat them uniquely." And I think we need to prayerfully discern how much is enough for the provision for our kids.
That's a big idea, and a lot of people struggle with it, so I'm glad you called that out. All right, so we've talked about lifestyle finish lines, gifts to family members. What about over on our balance sheet? What about finish lines related to the accumulation of assets?
Yeah, this is how much is enough for my future provision, right? And financial planning, of course, is the method that's used to determine how much is enough. And we might want to, of course, set some type of margin or put a buffer on top of whatever that number looks like as we do a financial projection. But this one's really, really important, because if we don't set a finish line on our assets and our accumulation, what happens is those assets and resources that could be available for kingdom impact, they get stalled out in this, you know, potential future needs and wants category. And that one is, I would say, the number one finish line to set for really catalyzing your kingdom impact bucket.
And this is where a certified kingdom advisor can really help, right, Rachel?
That is correct. So kingdom advisors would have, of course, cash flow management tools, and they can help you with some budgeting. But that financial planning calculation and figuring out how much is enough for future needs and wants is amazing for having an advisor partner with you on that.
There is no doubt about that. Well, unfortunately, we're out of time. We'll have you back real soon. But Rachel, thanks for stopping by.
Hey, thanks for having me.
That's Rachel McDonough, CFP, Certified Kingdom Advisor, and a much appreciated frequent contributor here at Faith 5. As I said, we're off today, so don't call in, but we've got some great calls lined up in advance. So we'll go to those just around the corner. I'm Rob West, and we'll be right back. Great to have you with us today on Faith and Finance on American Family Radio. Our team is away today, so don't call in, but we lined up some great questions in advance, and we'll be going to those here in just a moment. Let me also remind you that the advice that I give each day on this program is general in nature. We offer principles and ideas that apply at a high level. They are not personalized, so that's why you should always seek professional financial advice. And if you'd like to find a professional who shares your values, we, of course, here at Faith and Finance recommend the Certified Kingdom Advisor designation. These are men and women who've met high standards, and they've been trained to bring a biblical worldview of financial decision-making. You can find one at faithfi.com. In the news today, payscale.com has put out its list of the 10 highest-paying college majors just in time for the fall semester. Here are the top 10 majors and their average starting salaries, and I'll give you the highest and the lowest first. Electrical engineering and computer science degree holders will average about $128,000 to start. At the low end are building science majors earning $71,000 to start. Sprinkled in between them are petroleum engineers, operations research, and industrial engineering, interaction design, applied economics and management, actuarial mathematics, interestingly, optical science and engineering, and quantitative economics. I know those sound like they require a pretty smart person. And by the way, they're not any particular order for starting salary. Now, you may have noticed that all of these majors are technical in nature and stem from what is known as the STEM group, S-T-E-M, science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. If you're headed off to college and you have an aptitude for those things, you should check out the majors we mentioned. Remember, though, we always advise you choose a major that gives you the skills employers are willing to pay you for, in most cases at least, especially if you have to borrow for education. Paying back student debt is a lot easier with a job that pays well. Now, remember, there are other ways other than borrowing. You can get an on-campus job. Maybe you get a become a resident assistant in maybe your junior and senior year and cover your room and board. Perhaps you work during the summer. I mean, there are options there. And then the work you do before college and high school with dual enrollment classes or AP classes could cut down the number of credit hours you have to pay for in college. Being diligent to save early is key, but even, you know, if you're late in saving or if you have saved, there's still reason to look at some of these other options. So the goal is to minimize, if not eliminate, the need for borrowing. But the extent to which you do borrow, make sure you have a job waiting for you on the other end to the best of your ability that has a salary that allows you to pay that back in 10 years or less. I was talking earlier today with a caller who she was in her 70s and still had, you know, based on the schedule, another 15 to 20 years to pay. We don't want that. We want you to get out of debt as quickly as possible if you have to ever even get there in the first place. So, by the way, there's going to be a point here in a few years, can't believe I'm talking about this, that I'm going to have three in college at the same time. So I'm excited about that for them, dreading that a little bit because of the checks Julie and I are going to have to write. But nevertheless, it's coming, ready or not. All right, let's head to the phones. Let's go to Chicago. Hi, Grace. Go ahead.
Hi. I'll make this as quick as I can. I have to take the RMD this year, and I want to roll it, get a qualified,
charitable distribution?
Right.
Yeah.
I have deferred compensation, and they said they can't do that. So I want to know, how do I roll it over to an IRA? Does it cost money to do that?
Yes, you do, and you absolutely should be able to. So with a qualified plan, a deferred comp plan, in just about every case, I mean, you don't need to verify this with your plan administrator, but in just about every case, you absolutely can roll that
out to an individual retirement account. Although you wouldn't want to wait till the last week of the year to do it, you've got plenty of time now. So what you would want to do is choose an IRA provider, that's a financial institution or a broker. And I think perhaps even before that is deciding how you want it managed. Because one of the options, or one of the features, if you will, of an IRA is that there's virtually unlimited investment choices, which is great, unless you don't know which ones to pick. And so if you're going to do it yourself, that's fine. Just make sure you're ready for that. And then you pick the financial institution or broker of choice, roll it over. And then as soon as it gets there, as long as you're 70 and a half or older, you can absolutely do that, which you are if you need to take an RMD. You can do that qualified charitable distribution where it goes directly from your IRA and the institution holding it, and they cut a check straight to the ministry or the charity. And when they receive it, they can use 100% of the money. It counts towards your RMD, and you never recognize it as income, which in every other case, when you're taking money out of an IRA or a deferred comp, you are going to recognize it as income. This is the only way to do it where that's not the case. Now, if you want an advisor to enter the equation, then you would do that before you select the IRA provider, because you would want that advisor to be able to say where he or she wants to custody those assets based on their ability to manage it. But give me your thoughts on all that, Grace.
Well, that makes sense to me. That's very helpful. How do you choose an advisor? And does it cost money to do this rollover?
It should not. No. I mean, if anything, there might be a transaction fee that's very small, $25 or $50, but hopefully there's not any cost whatsoever. In terms of choosing an advisor, you know, we talk often here on this program about the only industry designation in the financial services industry that's widely accepted related to biblically wise financial advice. It's the Certified Kingdom Advisor designation. And it's for those men and women who already have a base of competency and experience, as evidenced by at least 10 years in the business and another industry designation. But then they go on to get training on a biblical worldview, application of finance. They have a pastor reference, a client reference, a statement of faith, a code of ethics, and annual continuing education. There's 1,500 of them in the U.S. and Canada, and you could find one right there in Chicago, many of them actually, when you go to our website, faithfi.com, click Find a Professional. You do a zip code search. I'd interview two or three and find the one that you feel like you have the best rapport with. You know, in choosing an advisor, I mean, in addition to just their experience and, you know, them talking to you about how, you know, once they get to know you, they'd manage the money and their track record, I would want to make sure you have a good rapport, that you feel like, you know, there's a compatibility there just relationally. I'd want to make sure that they're comfortable with the communication rhythms you are asking for. I'd want to make sure that you fit into the core of their client base, that you're not significantly below in terms of the assets or above their typical client. And I'd want to know if they're going to hand you off to another advisor in the firm, and because that would be the person you'd want to interview. So those would be the kinds of things. Now, be prepared, Grace. You know, you have to pay for those services. And, you know, it's not inexpensive in the sense that, you know, a typical advisor, you know, might charge you 1.5% or 1.25%. So, you know, on $500,000, I have no idea how much you have, but on $500,000, that'd be, you know, $6,250 a year. So, you know, you're going to pay for this, but you've worked long and hard to build up this wealth through your working years. And in my view, it's worth it to have somebody waking up every day thinking about managing this money. But what are your thoughts on that?
I appreciate your help. That's very helpful. Thank you so
Good.
Much.
You're welcome, Grace. I'm so glad you're thinking of the qualified charitable distribution. Listen, take Grace's advice, folks, here. If you're 70 and a half or older, you need to take money out of your IRA because of an RMD, use that qualified charitable distribution. The ministry wins, and you don't pay any tax. We'll be right back. Well, it's great to have you with us today on Faith and Finance. By the way, if you've not checked out our website recently, we'd love for you to do that. The wealth of content, articles, podcasts and videos there to help you be a wise and faithful steward of God's money is incredible. You'll find it all at faithfi.com. You can visit that on your smartphone or on your desktop. Again, faithfi.com. Just click the content button. Also, while you're there, check out the FaithFi app that can help you manage God's money and access all of this great content on the go. Just click the app tabs. Again, it's all at faithfi.com. All right, let's head back to the phones. Indianapolis, what a beautiful city. Grant, go right ahead.
Hi, Rob. How are you today?
Doing great. Thanks for your call.
That's awesome. I have a quick question. I'm a teacher. I'm in my 20s, and I've been able to amass a little bit of savings, but my salary is not going up with the rate of inflation, and I'm starting to have to dig into my savings. I tithe 10% with every check, but I'm not going to be able to continue to do that without pulling from my savings. And that really stresses me out. But if I pray about this, and if I don't tithe, I kind of feel guilty about it. So I don't know. I guess I was kind of looking for some wisdom on this.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate your desire, Grant, to give as unto the Lord and to be faithful in this area of systematic giving. And I think it's an important part of our journey as a believer is trusting in the Lord to use wisely what he has given us, not only to enjoy and not only to provide, but to give. And it's one of the ways we participate in God's activity. He doesn't need our money. He owns it all. He wants our hearts, but he allows us to be involved in what he's doing. And it's a privilege. In terms of, you know, thinking about your giving in light of the New Testament, I mean, clearly we see generosity, a hallmark of the Old and New Testament. But I think what stands out to me in the New Testament is, you know, giving systematically and proportionately, give, you know, as it has been given you. Also giving sacrificially. We see the widow giving out of her poverty, and Jesus celebrated that. It wasn't the amount. It was, you know, that she was giving out of a sacrifice. We should give, I think, as a worship to the Lord. We should also give freely or not under compulsion, we read in God's word. And, you know, I think that speaks to that last point that you made, which is you feel somewhat guilty. And I think we can be clear just based on the reading of Scripture that we shouldn't do it out of guilt, that we should do it as an overflow of our gratitude to God, realizing that, you know, we have an abundance even before the first dollar because of what he's done on our behalf through the shed blood of his son. And that reconciled us to him, and that we're rich because of his poverty when he sacrificed himself. Now, beyond that, though, there is the real dollars and cents of this that you have to make work. And I get that. I think the starting point is this idea of worship and giving freely and cheerfully. But in terms of the mechanics of that, you know, I think that's between you and the Lord. God knows your heart. He knows the resources you have. And, you know, you are a teacher. I love that. And I realize the reality is right now that inflation has caused the prices of, you know, things we depend on every day, like food and utilities, to go up much faster than incomes have. They're not keeping pace. And so that creates a challenge. So what that looks like for you, I think, again, that's something you pray about. If God were to prompt you to come out of savings for some of that, I don't think that's a bad thing. I also don't think it's a bad thing if you decided for a season, I'm going to continue giving systematically, but I'm going to dial it back. And I'm going to trust the Lord that he's going to continue to provide. And I'm going to look vigilantly and diligently for areas to cut back other than my giving, you know, even to the point about the widow and her maybe you look for other areas where for a season you know, sacrifice a subscription or, you know, cable television or as much eating out, you know, and look for ways where you can do more giving through sacrifice. But at the end of the day, I don't think, you know, God is not an accountant. It's not about a legalistic checking of a box. It really is about your heart posture. And there may be a season where you need to dial that back. I guess the last thing I would say is I would continue doing something. Let's continue to exercise that muscle of systematic giving, whether it's 6, 9, or 14%. I think that's ultimately your call. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. I love what you said in there. I really appreciate that, Rob. Thank you.
Absolutely, Grant. Lord bless you, buddy. Thanks for calling. Lakeland, Florida is where we're going next. Go ahead, Phil.
Yes, sir. I have a fairly large portfolio, and I'm just wondering, you know, when the stock market What is your opinion on moving everything over to cash if the stock market starts really going taking a dip?
I don't like it, Phil, and I'll tell you why. Number one is when we do that, we're normally doing that out of fear rather than sound financial planning. So those are emotional decisions typically done by people who are managing their own money, not an advisor who's looking at a disciplined kind of rules-based philosophy. I think the other challenge is there's inflation risk. So cash, while stable, doesn't grow and doesn't protect against inflation. And so holding large amounts of cash for an extended period of time can erode your purchasing power. And then finally, and this is the biggest one, is you're typically going to miss out on the market rebound. You know, historically, the stock market tends to recover after downturns, often rebounding while it's least expected. You know, usually the market recovers before the data that says it should recover. You know, once we kind of get to the, you know, bottom of, you know, there's no more sellers left and the buyers with all this cash on the side come rushing in often quicker than most people would expect. And so typically you miss the opportunity to benefit from the recovery. And the clearest example of this, and this isn't isolated, I could give you several of them, but the clearest was during the 2020 COVID pandemic. You know, when the pandemic hit in early 2020, the stock market experienced one of the fastest declines in history. I mean, the S&P 500 dropped over 30% in just a few weeks, and many investors fled to cash out of fear. But by August of 2020, the market had fully recovered, and by the end of the year, it reached record highs. Well, guess how many investors are listening to my voice right now that missed all of that? Because they got out. And that was, you could say, well, that was different. No, it really wasn't. I mean, we saw a similar kind of thing over a longer period of time with the 08 and 09 global financial crisis. So long answer to a short question, but as you can tell, I'm pretty determined that that would not be my course of action if we saw a big market downturn. Does that make sense?
Yes, sir. Thank you very much.
All right. God bless you, Phil. Thanks for calling today. More calls just around the corner on Faith and Finance. Stick around. Hey, great to have you with us today on Faith and Finance on American Family Radio. I'm Rob West. We're taking your calls and questions here. Hey, before we head back to the phones, let me mention our FaithFi Partner Program is relatively new. This is a really key way that you can help us fund the ministry here at FaithFi. It's those men and women, folks who count on this program, who support us charitably at $35 a month or more. We call them FaithFi Partners. They're kind of the lifeblood of the ministry. They're with us, supporting us every month. And one of the ways we say thank you to those folks is you receive pre-release copies of all of our studies and devotions. So we released our first study on Rich Toward God based on Luke 12 a few months ago, and we've already sold out of them. We're printing more now. Our new 21-day devotion, Look at the Sparrows, it's on financial fear and anxiety. It's beautiful, and it's just rich with scripture. I can't wait for you to see it. Well, our FaithFi partners get pre-release copies of those sent to their door automatically. And then we're going to launch our publication, a beautiful digest with just really, I think, thoughtful articles by theologians and financial professionals on how you can live as a faithful steward in areas like conversations and relationships, investing, generosity, legacy, and a whole host of others, all with beautiful images and graphics. We think you're going to love it, and it will be sent to your door as well 4 times a year as a FaithFi partner. So if you'd like to become a partner of ours here at FaithFi, just head to our website, faithfi.com, and click Give. Thanks in advance. All right, every line is full, so we're going to take these calls as quick as we can. We're going to go to Texas next and welcome Tony. Go ahead, sir.
Yes, sir, Rob. Enjoy your program. I had a quick question. I'm faithfully paying off a credit card after the death of my mother, and it's like $320-something a month. Which option do I stay with that? Well, obviously, I'll stay with that. My wife is willing to help me once she finished her credit card to help me pay it off, or should I roll it over and open up a transfer of balance? Just wanted to get your wisdom on that.
Yeah, I appreciate that. What is the total amount that you have, Tony?
About a little less than $8,000.
Okay. Yeah. So if you're over, and this isn't anything magic about this number, but just my experience is that if you're over 4,000, it does make sense for you to use what's called a debt management program. And basically what would happen is the debt would stay right where it is, except the accounts would be closed and the interest rates would be dropped. So whatever you're paying today, they're going to be adjusted down to somewhere between, depending on the creditor, usually 0 and 8%, could go as high as 12. And the combination of you making now a level monthly payment through a debt management company and those lower interest rates will allow you to pay that back 80% faster, and you can prepay it. So if for, you know, your wife has pays off some other debts and now you all have more money to allocate over to accelerate this even further, you can absolutely do that. And our provider there is ChristianCreditCounselors.org. ChristianCreditCounselors.org. They've worked with thousands of our listeners. They're amazing, and they really are godly folks that just want to see God's people out of debt. The reason I like that, Tony, better than a balance transfer, even though you might say, well, why wouldn't I just get the 0% for 18 months and then jump to another one? Number one, it typically, because you take the pressure off, my experience is you just don't stay as focused on paying it off. The second reason is there's going to be a charge right up front of somewhere between 2 and 3% of the balance. And so, you know, if you've got $8,000 and you're paying 3%, I mean, that's, you know, $250 right off the bat that you're going to have to pay before, you know, you start paying off the debt. So for those reasons, I just would prefer you not to do the balance transfer game. Just get this over to Christian Credit Counselors, and they should be able to take it from there.
Thank you, sir. God bless you.
All right, thanks. We appreciate your call. Let's go to Nashville. What a great city. Hi, Lori. Go ahead.
Hi there, Rob, and thanks for taking my call. Quick question about the pattern of insurance rates. I'm reluctant to start shopping again for insurance, auto, home, and my premiums went up like 31% this year, and I had just changed over to another insurance company last year. I have no claims, and I just wondered if that seemed to be the pattern across the country or maybe for this region.
No, it is. It's nationwide. Yeah, it's nationwide, Lori. Here's the reason why. I mean, the top three reasons I've been reading about lately, there's maybe more than this that contribute to this. But number one is just increased vehicle repair costs. So, you know, cars these days have advanced technologies. They're basically, you're driving around a giant computer. You've got sensors and cameras and electronics and, you know, computer chips, and it just makes repairs more expensive. I don't know if you've been to a repair shop lately. It's kind of hard to get out of there without spending $1,000. Second thing is we've had more, I think, severe accidents and medical costs based on what I've been reading. And the consensus is it's partly due to distracted driving. We've got just more people looking at their phones while they're driving. And, you know, then you've got congestion and larger vehicles like SUVs, which end up resulting in more medical claims, unfortunately. And then you've got inflation and supply chain disruptions. So, you know, inflation has driven up the costs of goods and services, including the vehicle parts and the labor. And then you've got global supply chain disruptions, which cause shortages, in particular shortages in chips, which they've kind of worked through that, but there's been other shortages. You put all that together, and it's just resulted in higher claims because the insurance companies are passing along their higher costs. So what do you do about that? I mean, I think one of the things you can do, which is not fun, and you're pointing to this, is you can shop, you know, your rates every 2 to 3 years, because we tend to see that, you know, folks or insurance companies in that first year will price it a little more aggressively. You always, you know, want to try to take advantage of safe driving discounts. Bundling can help. But unfortunately, what your experience is definitely not isolated.
Okay. All right. Well, I did take one move, though. I thought if insurance rates are increasing, I went ahead and bought a mutual fund in insurance. And you know what? It's going up.
There you go. I like it. You're getting creative there, Lori. Hey, the other thing you can do, obviously, is push that deductible up and then take the difference and put it in your emergency savings. And that way, if you need it, it's there. But on a monthly basis, you're paying less.
You're right. The deductible, I increased to $5,000 on everything.
Oh, wow. Yeah, there you go. Yeah. You've already done it. Listen, you're way ahead of me. Next time I'm away, Lori, you're hosting the program. You got this
Thanks,
under
Rob.
Control here. Hey, God bless
Only
you.
Because, Only because I'm listening to you. Thanks a lot.
Well, I'm glad to hear it. I'll take that. God bless you. Hey, let's go to Illinois. Hi, Mary. Go ahead.
Hi, Rob. How you doing?
I'm great. Thanks.
Okay, so I have investments already. I have a financial advisor, and I'm going to have a meeting in a couple of weeks with her. But I was listening to one of your shows, and I was you were talking about making sure our investments are invested in companies that align with God's plan.
Yeah.
So I was wondering if you have information or if you could refer me to a site or something to know what companies I would want to invest in if I'm not already in those now with finances are ready, my investments
Absolutely.
Are ready.
Yeah, I'm so glad you asked this question, Mary. You know, more and more we're seeing really world-class, compelling investment options that are built to align with biblical values. I mean, they're still pursuing a very attractive return and creating a lot of compelling risk-adjusted returns for their investors, but making sure they avoid companies who are misaligned with their values and looking to embrace companies that specifically are creating human flourishing. You can find a list. I'll give you a website, faithandinvesting.com/faithfi. Let me say it again, faithandinvesting.com/faithfi. It's a free PDF to download. Take that list of funds and compare it to the ones available in your 401k. We'll be right back. Hey, great to have you with us today on Faith and Finance on American Family Radio. I'm Rob West. Here in our final segment today, we're going to get to as many calls as we can. We've had some great questions today. I so appreciate you inviting us into your stories each day and allowing us to take part in what God's doing in your financial life. As you can tell, we love doing it. So the team here, everybody here at FaithFi and the team that makes this radio broadcast happen every day, we're just so thankful for the chance you give us to be a part of what God's doing. And we want to be an encouragement to you, point you back to Scripture, and hopefully help you be that wise and faithful steward that you want to be. So let's do that right now. We're going to head to Ohio and welcome Holly to the broadcast. Go ahead.
Hi.
Hey there.
Hi, how are you? I love your program.
Thank you.
I just wanted to see what I needed to do. This is all new for me. My husband passed. I'm selling a home, and I would like to know, you know, where to start with everything. Yeah. I know I need an emergency fund. I know I want to help the children. I want to put money into another home that I'm going into, that type of thing.
Okay. Yeah. Holly, do you have somebody who's walking alongside you in this process? Or are you kind of doing all this yourself? Or do you have some wise counsel?
I don't.
Okay. In terms of kind of the basics, are you in a place where you've got plenty of income to cover your expenses and you have a surplus? Or do you have some questions just about where, you know, what you're going to use to pay the bills and whether you have enough? Where do you find yourself?
I'm okay right now. I do have, you know, income to pay for bills.
Okay.
Per month.
Okay.
From a survivorship.
Okay.
And after that, this is all new for me.
Yeah, no, I get that. So what are your income sources right now?
Just the survivorship.
Okay, so Social Security survivor benefits?
Correct.
Okay, so that will continue indefinitely. What is your age right now?
I just turned 60.
Okay, all right. So are you working or not?
No.
Okay.
Just helping take care of my mom.
Okay. All right. Very good. Well, you know, here's what I'd love to do. I'd love to get you connected with one of our certified Christian financial counselors, just as to be a blessing to you. We'd love to cover the cost of that and just let you meet with somebody over a series of meetings, maybe every couple of weeks for a few months, just to help you get your spending plan in place, get a list of assets and liabilities, you know, get a system to manage the flow of money coming in and out, you know, just so you have some more peace of mind about where you're going from here. I mean, in terms of, you know, how to prioritize, I think you mentioned the emergency fund. That's important. When you say you're selling a home and what to do with the proceeds, tell me where you're headed next in terms of your living situation.
Going to another home that I partly own
okay.
in Ohio, and then
I want to put money into that home as well because it needs it. And okay. just see if I can, you know, give
okay.
to
yeah.
someone to help.
Sure. What do you expect in the way of proceeds from this home you're selling?
$160,000.
And what do you think you would need to put into the one you're moving into?
At least between $30,000 and $50,000.
All right. Let's say it's $50,000. So now we've got $110,000 left. And what are you spending on a monthly basis, roughly?
I would say about $1,500 just
okay.
in debt bills.
Okay.
You know.
So let's say with everything, gifts for the kids at Christmas and friends and eating out, and you might take a trip every now and then. I mean, let's say it's $2,500 a month. I mean, you'd want at least $15,000, if not a full year, would be $30,000. I think somewhere between $15,000 and $30,000 just in liquid savings would be good. So if we have $110,000 left after you put $50,000 into this new property, you know, then that pulls us down to, let's say, you know, $80,000 or $90,000. And then what would you be, you said beyond this home you're moving into that needs improvements, where are you headed after that?
I'm not sure. That's
okay.
probably where it will be greatly appreciated.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And so I think that's going to come down to your budget. And so I think that's where somebody could help you just kind of work through putting a spending plan together so that we're not guessing. And I'm not saying you don't know what your expenses are. You probably have a great handle on it. But looking at, okay, if you were to buy something else, you know, how much would you have available from this new property you're moving into, you know, if that were to be sold, although you said it's shared ownership, so you may not be able to. And then what could you afford to buy after that? I think the key for you right now is probably not to make a lot of big moves, doing a lot of giving, unless the Lord leads you that way. I'd probably hang on to what you have, get it into a safe place like a high yield savings account until it becomes clear from the Lord where you're headed and what you can afford, starting with the big ticket items, which is, you know, most significantly the big three are housing, transportation, and food. I mean, that's where typically we spend most of our money in terms of the month to month. And so I think getting that budget in place, getting a long-term plan and comparing that to the resources you have available is probably pretty important as a next step. So let's do this. I'm going to do two things. One is hold the line. We're going to get your information. We're going to send you a great book called Wise Women Managing Money that a good friend of ours wrote when her husband passed away. I think it'll be an encouragement to you. Second, we're going to get a certified Christian financial counselor in touch with you to help you work up that budget and specifically address what do I do with the money after the home sale and how do I think about a long-term situation for housing and what I can spend if I were to buy something else or rent, and then all the rest of the budget, we'll get that in place at the same time, and they can kind of walk with you in making those decisions. Does that sound good?
Yes, sir. I really appreciate it.
Hey, absolutely. Happy to do it. I'm so sorry to hear of your husband's passing, but hopefully this will be a blessing to you, Holly, and we're going to cover all the cost of that so you won't have any expenses related to it. Hang on the line. We'll get your information. Let's go to Winter Garden. Hi, Lillian. Go ahead.
Hi, Rob. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question. Recently, I heard you say that you can freeze your credit because I received an email that said my Social Security is on the dark web due to the data breach from the national public data.
Right.
And I'm trying to figure out how can I do this quickly and as efficiently so that I don't know, should I email them, call them? And if I call them, do I have to call each credit company?
You do have to do this individually. Let me just say there was millions of people affected by that. And if it's not national data, it's something else. I mean, I was notified the other day from my cell phone provider that they had a data breach. I mean, everybody's having a data breach these days. It's just the reality. And if, you know, I'm convinced everybody has some information about them on the dark web. So, you know, you're not alone, but taking these steps is important. And so I'm not minimizing it. I think you should freeze your credit. We should all freeze our credit. The best way to do it is on the web. Are you comfortable with that?
Oh, yes, yes,
okay.
Yes. I was wondering, yes.
Okay, so get a pen handy. I'm going to give you the three names of the three credit bureaus, and all of them, if you put a .com after their name, you'll go to their website, and you can follow the instructions to put the freeze in place, and it's free. Equifax, E-Q-U-I-F-A-X, TransUnion, and Experian, E-X-P-E-R-I-A-N. I'll say them again. Equifax, TransUnion, Experian. Put a .com after all three of their names. You've got to go to each of them separately, but you can freeze your credit there. I think that'd be a great next step for you. Lillian, thanks for your call today. Let's finish in Nebraska. Monica, go ahead.
Hi, I hear your show a lot on the radio here as I'm driving home. I had a question. So my dad is starting to retire from his job, and he's got equity in his home. I had a question about the reverse mortgage. He has a significant amount of credit card debt that, because he is retiring, we're going to have trouble paying that. But he has, I didn't know if it was a good idea to do the reverse mortgage to pay that debt off so that can live.
Sure. I think you would need to look into it and just see if he qualifies for a reverse mortgage. It could be a great option. I mean, does he have at least 50% equity in his home? And he's over 62.
Yeah, he does. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So, he may be a great option for it. Essentially, well, let me ask you, is there a mortgage still?
Yeah, there is. Yeah.
Okay. Got it. Essentially what would happen is the reverse mortgage could at the very least pay off the existing mortgage, except now he wouldn't have a mortgage payment unless he wanted to. But he wouldn't automatically. So that would come out of the budget, which that by itself may allow him to balance it. And then we could focus on getting the credit cards paid off, and then, he'd be out of debt and once and for all. And then if he wanted to at any point to start repaying the reverse mortgage, he could. But this, I think, is a planning tool to consider. I mean, it's one of your biggest assets. I mean, some people have IRAs and 401ks, and, we have home equity. And so when we're planning in this season of life, ideally we'd get out of debt and be completely out of debt and just live on Social Security and some sort of income stream from our investments. But the reality is 2/3 of retirees are entering retirement with a mortgage. Whereas it was only half a few years ago. Now it's 2/3. A lot of them are ill-prepared with regard to assets to use to fund their living expenses. And so they're just struggling to make ends meet, let alone have any margin to kind of enjoy this season. And that's where a reverse mortgage is an option, not the option. It's not for everybody. It's not without fees and expenses and interest. But it is an option to consider, and either getting rid of that mortgage or getting rid of the mortgage and getting a monthly check that he knows as long as he's alive and lives in that home, he doesn't ever have to repay it. And nothing beyond the home will ever be required from his estate or him. It can be a great option. To check it out and get an illustration, I'd go to movement.com/faith. That's Movement Mortgage, our underwriter. Thanks for your call today. Well, folks, that's going to do it for us. Let me say a big thanks to my team today. Certainly couldn't do this without them. Handling our phones today was Adam Suddeth, producing and engineering today, Mr. Devin Patrick, and providing me with great research today and just helping navigate the program is Jim Henry. Thanks to you for being along with us today, and we'll look forward to having you back tomorrow. God bless you. Bye-bye.